translation. Uddhava thus asserted the Lord continually from childhood and in his old age, that attitude of service never slackened. As soon as he was asked about the message of the Lord, he at once remembered him. Yeah. So the context, of course, you probably know better than me, is this, that the sages, they want to hear about some higher knowledge than was given in the first canto. In the first canto, we're fortunately allowed to have the darshan of Vishnu that Brahma had. And this is Garbhadakshay Vishnu, Mahavishnu. Yeah. And but the sages, they knew that Maitreya was there when Uddhava heard from Krishna more confidential knowledge, more confidential knowledge. And then Vidura, they heard, also talked to Maitreya. So they're asking, oh, please tell us what Vidura and Maitreya discussed, because we really think we're going to come in contact with some higher knowledge here. Yeah. So then Sukadeva Goswami, they start to describe this meeting. And it started, of course, with Vidura meeting Uddhava and trying to get this some more advanced knowledge. But because Vidura is like Uddhava's father and Maitreya is like his grandfather, then Uddhava feels some hesitation to take the post of guru in front of such a superior authority. And also, as we understand, because he knew that when Vidura asked the questions, he would stimulate Maitreya to really understand what he had heard, you know, like that, Shravanam Kirtanam. You know. So he sent him to Maitreya. So right now, Vidura has been asking very good questions, very stimulating questions. And even though he knows the answers formally, superficially, he wants to hear it again. What happened to this person? What happened to that person? What's happened to that person? And he wants to you know, experience the Bahava, the perspective. Because, you know, we're not satisfied with possessing sense objects. We're not satisfied, you know, gratifying our senses with the sense objects. We're not satisfied with the psychological gratification, the mental gratification. And then we feel more satisfied if we have the intellectual gratification. Everything is proper intellectually, you know, more profound understanding. We're not satisfied with the quick argument. It's logical, Socrates said, but it's just not in good taste. You know? So bhava means that taste, that perspective. You know? And of course, when bhava matures, it becomes prema, like that, so on. So he's asking these questions, and now he's describing the result of his vibhava. He's giving this stimulation to Uddhava, and he's one after another, one person after another, and Uddhava's taking such stimulation from his father-like associate, that he's entering into the bhava like that. You know? So Uddhava thus served the Lord continually from childhood, and in his old age that attitude of service never slackened. As soon as he was asked about the message of the Lord, he at once remembered all about him. So of course this is smaranam, not mean just like, you know, mental remembering, but remembering at heart, entering into the contemplation. Okay. Then Prabhupada says, the transcendental service to the Lord is not mundane. The service attitude of the devotee gradually increases and never becomes slackened. Wow. So, of course, that's the whole thing. You know, nihabhikramo nasho sti. You know, whatever little bit of service we do, oh, by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, some sincerity, then that stimulates us, you know, to make more progress and to become more sincere. I always remember that one of Jayananda's, you know, basic concept was always stay engaged in some service. You know, it may not be like, you know, the service you plan, or it may not be like some what very, you know, famous service, you know, or something. But okay, always be engaged in some service. It'll help somebody, you know, move the tulsi plants off the roof. Answer the door to the temple when somebody's ringing. You know? And if somehow or other, if you're engaged in service, that's the best way to get more intelligence, to get more motivation to do service, and to maybe get more intensely involved in service like that. So the service attitude of the devotee gradually increases. Generally, old age, he first vowed retirement from mundane service. But in the transcendental service of the Lord, there is no retirement at all. Okay. It's a very, very nice purport, especially maybe for our geriatric audience here. the geriatric bhaktas, you know, myself and everybody, but also many other people too, I know listening, younger people. Prabhupada says old age is a good friend to the devotee, you know, because then you're really convinced, your teeth are falling out, your memory is going away, your liver is not so hot anymore, you know, and your address book every year gets a little bit smaller like that. So you really get, you're really convinced, you know. And Nitagore Sundar, our friend here, the director of our institution, NEOS, he's actually, we call it the director of a psychiatric hospital here, and he works in the area of geriatric psychiatry. And it's very interesting because, you know, they're all old people. And he said one of the things they do for them, because, you know, they're in the hospital, some of them, so they have, of course, they have a, you know, a recreation area, a lounge area, and they have some meetings every day for them if they want it. But also they show a lot of biographical movies. And then people get a chance to look at other people's lives, and they start to try and make their own biography. Because you know you're leaving, and so it's a real time. The Dalai Lama said, you should live a good life so that when you're old, you can think about it and enjoy it for a second time. Remember it for a second, enjoy it for a second time. You know, so that's a lot of what the natural thing is, that your abilities are diminishing. So now it's a time for introspection and maybe some real basic, you know, appreciation from the heart that you are going to take something with you, you know. Yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tyajati yanti kalevaram tam tamai vayate konteya sadata bhava bhavitaha. You know, you're going to take your perspective and maybe some abilities even, you know, mental abilities, music abilities, art abilities, you know, attitudes, you know. Some of them may survive. So it's time to pack your luggage. It's time to sort things out, you know. But other people, they're thinking, oh, I haven't got this sensuous ability. All these things are coming to my mind, like Fritz Lang. You may know him. He was one of the pioneers of motion pictures. He wrote a book, did a movie called, I think it was Woman in the Moon, Frau in der whatever. It was kind of a famous thing. But he said, don't let them deceive you that old age is a good thing. He says, as you get older, every year you're more and more separated from the things you wanted to do, more and more frustrated, you know. But yet, as a devotee, we realize that everything we've been doing maybe is really, we haven't been doing it at all. Prakriti kriya manani gunai karmani sarvasaha. We have a little devotional attitude, but mostly we've just been dovetailing our sensuous satisfaction, you know. We've been doing pretty much karma yoga. I like doing art. I like sailing ships. I like making PowerPoint shows. I like this person. Okay. And so Krishna uses it, you know, karma yoga, you know. But as we become more purified by our intelligence, then we can do what we understand is the correct thing to do, no? And then even though it may not be so naturally gratifying for our mind and senses, but we do it because it's, you know, we understand this is what Krishna needs, you know, what Prabhupada needs. So more Jnana Mishra, you know, Bhakti Yoga. You know? But naturally, as we get older, yeah, just all these karma and stuff is start kind of running out, and we have to really be forced onto the mental platform. You know? And if we don't have any mental platform, of course, you become depressed and turn to, you know, some kind of deadening experience like intoxication or you know, garbage kata. There's so much available. Trash literature, trash, puppet shows, movies, and just try and forget, that what our reality is. So of course we're creating the bhava of a cockroach or something, the bhava of some animal, by doing that. We die that way. So Papa says, generally in old age, a person is allowed retirement from mundane service, but in the transcendental service of the Lord, there is no retirement at all. On contrary, the service attitude increases more and more with the progress of age. In the transcendental service, there is no satiation, and therefore there is no retirement. We are satisfied. We did something. We appreciate it. We relish it. Other devotees, we did a nice service together. Ah, so nice. And we relish it with Krishna, But then it also doesn't diminish our desire. I forgot who it was, Albert Camus or something. He said, in desire I have no satisfaction. He said, but in satisfaction I have no desire. No. So this is what happens. The devotee, he's satisfied, but he keeps a little dissatisfaction there. To go on to bring him right to his next service like that. Materially, when a man becomes tired by rendering service in his physical body, he is allowed retirement. But in the transcendental service, there is no feeling of fatigue because it is spiritual service and is not on the bodily plane. So I would say that, we are allowed physical retirement. The light of the Bhagavat has the different verses and the beautiful pictures. And one is a very, very nice picture of a Chinese Taoist monk. And he's walking along. And it looks like one heron or crane is kind of like, squawking at him saying, get a job, like that. But Prabhupada said, no, this is the time for retirement, At 50 years old, the sensuous energy in the body is finished. And maybe we can push it to 55, But then we should start, what is it, until 30 years old or something, you can run on the field, kick the ball, scream and yell. Until 40, you can be pacing up and down the sidelines, screaming and yelling at the players. Until 50, maybe you can be a coach, But after that, you got to just sit and watch the game. And when all these stupid things are going on, you just accept it. They've got to learn their hard way. And when somebody comes up during the game and asks you, you give your comments, So Chanika Pandit says, dress your age. Dress your age. So we learn to act our age, So past 50, past 60, our contribution is going to be more like perspective, experience, And still, you can do some things, and actually even you see devotee learns how to manipulate his senses. And even though his senses are getting arthritis or vision's falling apart, we learn how to use our senses right to the very end in a very nice fashion like that. Of course, Prabhupada is a supreme example of this. Even right to the very end, he was using his senses to do his service in the most elevated way like that. So we can die. But let's die a harmonious death, so that everything goes out, with full efficiency. We don't die with our liver intact, and our heart failing. No, everything is used up to the maximum like that for a very nice service. And then we can go on into our next service, with a good attitude and use the tools better. So there's no retirement for a devotee. But there's a change in the service. We are allowed to retire the senses. We should retire them. And we are allowed even to retire the mind so much. But we're not allowed to retire the intelligence. Rather, we should cultivate the intelligence, the intellect, the perspective. And again, motivate people by exemplary sensuous activities, exemplary, mental work like that. But it's not going to be the strong point of a devotee at this age. So let's go ahead here, see what else Prabhupada says about Uddhava. Service on the bodily plane, dwindles as the body grows older. Well, Prabhupada says the same thing. Service on the bodily plane dwindles as the body grows older. But the spirit is never old, and therefore on the spiritual plane, The service is never tiresome. You know? So again, as we say, is that we were going into Vrajamanda Parikrama many years, and you see many times there's just groups of maybe three, four, you know, people like that. We see Babaji's or something, and they're dressed in very simple, some simple gumsha type cloth in the bottom, and maybe something over their shoulder, some cloth, maybe gray, a little bit older cloth, and their blanket rolled up in a sack with a couple of the rope to make a handle out of it over their shoulder. Some very old worn shoes, a kamandalu can, and a stick, and walking along together, you know. And before, they may have been, you know, chief executive of some fantastic organization. They may have been a general in the army, where they could have sent people to their death in a single moment's notice. But now they've chosen to wander around the Braj. You know, I was told something that every day the Brajabasis feeds something like, you know, 15,000 people or something. I don't know what it was, what it is. Every day there's people just doing madhukar all over Braja. And you get to know everybody, other people, and you meet somebody, and he says, oh, come with us. There's a nice festival in Garuda Govinda. Garuda Govinda is having their festival in that village this week. Oh, okay. And you'd by the camp by the side of the road at night to sit down and have a little water to handle your needs. In the morning, get up and move on like that. And so you have no necessities. If Krishna feeds me, if there's madhukar, okay. If I will have some, you know, veranda, you know, eaves to sit under to keep out of the rain, okay. If I have, you know, some companionship, okay. So then the existence on the sensuous platform naturally diminishes, and the mental platform, and even even the Buddhi platform, until one actually starts to reawaken his Baba, his real life on the spiritual platform. You know? And so we already are, you know, participating in spiritual activities, and of course Braja is an embassy, it's a manifestation, Gokula, of the spiritual world. So if we're wandering around in Gokula, or wandering around even in Prabhupada's ISKCON temples, then what we're seeing externally is actually stimulating us, you know, to see the internal reality. Everything here is just a projection of, you know, something which is real. You know? And the three modes of nature make it seem real materially. But as as I go, Mamchayo Bhyacharena Bhakti Yogena Sevate Sagunan Samati Jaitan Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. Then we automatically surpass the modes and begin to see the how the projection is here. And of course, Krishna is projecting himself in this world in terms of effective preaching, you know, preaching requirements and stuff. So again, our life ceases to be so much on what we're seeing, and even what we're understanding, you know, but more upon what Krishna is actually playing as Lila, like that. This is my understanding. Uddhava undoubtedly became old, but that does not mean that his spirit became old. Of course, Krishna was, 140 years old? So I guess Uddhava was also 140 years old. Yeah. Uddhava undoubtedly became old, but that does not mean that his spirit became old. I guess if we're pushing this here, Uddhava would be maybe 140 years old, and Vidura maybe is like 210 years old, and Maitreya maybe is like 260 years old or something. But Uddhava undoubtedly became old, but that does not mean that his spirit became old. His service attitude matured on the transcendental plane. His service attitude matured. How nice. Oh, how nice. On the transcendental plane. Wow. And therefore, as soon as he was questioned by Vidura about Lord Krishna, he at once remembered his Lord by reference to the context and forgot himself on the physical plane. So here's the Vibhava. Vidura is asking the right questions, you know. And he gives a list of names. And so maybe he's seeing the reaction Uddhava has as he says the names, and even picking his list, or his list of names, his list of questions is actually changing in a dynamic fashion as he sees the reaction Uddhava is having. And he wants to get Uddhava on the platform on a very high platform, maybe even higher than he can appreciate, like that. You know? That is the sign of pure devotional service to the Lord, as will be explained later on Lakshanam Bhakti Yogasya, etc., in Lord Kapila's instructions to his mother, Devahuti. Of course, I was thinking about trying to track this down, and I guess with Vedabase.com, with a search, I could have tracked it down. But the question is, why did Prabhupada put this in here? Of course, maybe it's in Vishnath Chakravarti's commentary, or Bhaktisiddhanta, Yoktivinoda Thakur are mentioning it. But the question is, why did they mention it? You know, how do these different instructions Rupa Shiksha, Sanatan Shiksha, Devahuti Shiksha, how do they all fit together? You know, I would say Srimad Bhagavatam is so incredible. It's so many prayers, so many different attitudes, perspectives, and the Sanskrit is such a profound language to carry such subtle meanings, that even the acharyas, like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, as he's trying to put it together in different perspectives, much feel that he has to pick out one perspective, one attitude right now, and collect from Srimad Bhagavatam the necessary perspectives and stimulation, for his audience. But Prabhupada's putting it in here. That is a sign of pure devotional service to the Lord, as will be explained later on in Lord Kapila's instructions to his mother. Lakshanam Bhakti Yogasya. And that is that one forgets oneself on the physical plane. And then is what directly in contact. I remember when Prabhupada's talking to somebody in Los Angeles, sitting in the garden, and maybe some devotees here, they even actually were there. And the person is like being a little bit argumentative. And so Prabhupada's sitting there, and he's kind of like talking to the guy and kind of like chiding him a little bit and kind of joking with him and explaining things. And then he kind of goes back, he chants a little bit, and maybe half closes his eyes, and then comes back, and then the person says something else, and he responds. And so you can see Prabhupada, he's just preaching, but he keeps going in and out of intense internal consciousness like that. So that the same way, Sridhar Maharaj made this point that there's two kinds of preachers. One is the Madhyama Adhikari, who by effort and everything else is getting in contact with the Uttama Adhikari position and can offer some perspective from that. So he's the one who's the other one is the one who's on the Uttama Adhikari platform, who comes down to the Madhyama Adhikari platform to reach out to people and see things, to see demons, to see devotees, to see friendly people, to see innocent people like that, and then be able to communicate like that, so on. So it was very nice, remembering that the symptom definitely seemed to be there in Prabhupada. He was just chanting and taking himself back, to internal consciousness. And then even, like, it seemed like getting perspective on what to tell this person like that, so on. So pretty much, I think that's all of our realization for this particular verse, And I'm sure other people have even better comments to make. So any other comments or questions about Uddhava's ecstasy and Prabhupada's purport? Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.
Maharaj, I looked up that verse that he was referring to.
Ah.
It's 3:29, 11, and 12. On explanation of devotional service by Lord Kapila Dev, and the English is: the manifestation of unadulterated devotional service is exhibited when one's mind is at once attracted to hearing the transcendental name and qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who resides in everyone's heart. Just as the water of the Ganges flows naturally down towards the ocean, such devotional ecstasy, uninterrupted by any material condition, flows towards the Supreme Lord. That was
Of course, that reminds you of Kunti Devi immediately, right?
Yeah, so many.
That reminds you immediately of Kunti, you know? Yeah. But she was saying, let my mind flow like that. So she, at least she was manifesting herself as not being on that platform completely or something, whatever. But she's saying, let my mind flow to the lotus feet of Krishna like the Ganges flows uninterrupted.
She says, O Lord of Madhu, as the Ganges forever flows towards the sea, let my attraction be constantly drawn unto you without being diverted to anyone else. Tvayim ananya vishayamatir madhupate sakrit pratim uvidhatata gangevagam udandati. Ganga as a Ganges, Udandati as it flows down towards the sea.
Wow. So it's a matter of liquid bhava. Yeah. Wow. Do you get some realizations about liquid bhava while you're sailing on the ocean?
Well, I don't know. But I definitely get some nice realizations. Liquid
about
bhava.
Birth, death,
I'm
going to
meditate on that one.
Yeah.
Next time I'm out.
Does being on the ocean, does it give you always like a little perspective about that, you know, about Jama Mritya Jara Vyadi? Yeah.
Well, I can tell you some realizations, analogies and thoughts we had, metaphors out sailing.
Yeah.
One of my favorite was expressed by our godbrother, Vatsal. Him and I were out sailing one day. And we were sailing. It was we saw a storm coming, and we weren't terribly far from the harbor, so we thought, well, let's head on into the harbor. And as we were coming in towards the harbor, there was like a mountain that sort of, from where we were, we could see the storm coming. But as you got close to the harbor, you couldn't see it. It was off at the horizon, but definitely heading our way. And so we're heading in to take shelter. And then we saw another boat heading out from the harbor. It couldn't see the storm coming, but it was heading out towards not a terribly dangerous situation, but it would have kind of gotten cold and a little bit nasty, but tolerable. Anyway, so the point that Vatsal made, which I thought was brilliant, was that he said, just see, we're both sailing, both of our boats, our boat and this other boat, we're both sailing on the same breeze. It's exactly the same wind. But we're sailing such that we're heading into the harbor, and he's sailing such as he's heading out in towards a nasty situation. We're going in totally opposite directions, but on the same breeze. Wow. So analogy, of course, is dealing with the material nature, that it can either carry us to Krishna or away from Krishna, depending upon how we sail our life.
Also, to the devotees have a little bit higher intelligence about what the ambience is, no?
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, devotees, they kind of understand what's more. You know, the karmis, they think, oh, beautiful girl goes by, there's a fragrance, a little whiff of a nice perfume, and they're thinking, oh, this is a wonderful situation. But a devotee's thinking, oh, my God, it's good. Watch out.
Exactly. Our perspective is so different. And it's all the material nature. So that beautiful woman is dragging this person into illusion, but for a devotee and Krishna in our heart, seeing that, all right, we see this as a beautiful woman, but we're adjusting our consciousness. We're seeing it through the eyes, seeing her through the eyes of the Shastra, and Krishna's so pleased that our consciousness is becoming purified, where the materialist, he's becoming covered over. It's the same woman, the same breasts, you know, the same physical form. But for him, for the materialist, it's dragging them down. For a devotee, Krishna sees our earnest desire in our heart to not want to become contaminated, to take shelter at Krishna's feet. Krishna's so pleased. It's the same woman, the same skin, the same everything.
So devotee might be thinking, oh, she could be a good pujari.
Hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Or a good book distributor.
There's also the saying, the fools rush in where angels fear to tread. So that must have been around for a while, that people had intelligence and other people, the mudhas, they rush in.
I was in Texas, and Jai Waitamaras was there. It was very nice. We had some nice discussion. Actually, we really bonded this time when we started talking about Shakespeare. We realized that we both, you know, our Maya. anyway, his book's coming out. Maybe you know. He did this. He's doing this commentary on Ecclesiastes in the Bible. And everything under the sun is vanity, this and that. Because that was one thing that really hit him in his own spiritual life development as a child. But very much, that's the whole thing. Ecclesiastes, just like you're saying, somebody says, see this, this is new. And he said, they have forgotten the generations that have gone before and will go after. There is nothing new under the sun. All is vanity.
He's a great writer. You said Dwaita Maharaj?
Yeah, he is. He puts enough flavor into it to keep it interesting and some very nice to be like that. So it's been a very good book. I'm just looking through it like that. Yeah. And Ecclesiastes, of course, is it is. It's like I say, it's a really potent text like that. You know. Yeah.
Maharaj, this is Jaya Jagadish Das. Please accept my obeisances and thank you for your ongoing contribution to our Sangha.
I guess we'll see you. We're going to be out in San Jose in last week in June. Will you be there?
Oh, yes. I'll make sure to find you.
Okay.
So I don't have a question per se, but our host Ramananda is in a situation where he can only whisper. So he wrote in the chat feature a question. And he says, I wasted my youth by not dedicating myself 100% to the service of the Lord. Now in old age, I find I have no power to convince those younger than me to not make the same mistake waiting until old age to become Krishna conscious. It's very frustrating. What to do?
Yeah. I think everybody experiences this, you know, in their preaching, you know. And it's not just a matter of like giving people, you know, Gopi Bhava or something like that. You know, it's so much. It's what all these wisdom traditions say the same thing, you know. If old age could do what youth knows, if old age could do what youth can do, and if youth could do what old age knows. Mark Twain said the same thing. He said, life would be a lot easier if we were born 80 years old and lived backwards. So on. So I think it's just a universal appreciation. Same thing, Plato? Plato said, one of my greatest happinesses in life is talking to old, experienced people, old, experienced men, and hearing about them, about different pathways that they've gone down that in the future I may have to go down. Like that and so on. So I think it's just that there are some people, you know, who are interested, yeah? And it's just that Maya's job is to create this illusion. Our job is to try and get the message out. And like it says, we're never going to feel fully satisfied that we got it out to everybody. But I would just say the basic principle is Yare Deki Tari Kaha Krishna Pradesh. You know, we just, wherever we go, wherever we meet, whatever we have the opportunity, from our side, we try and keep ourselves really sharp, really purified, saturated with Vedic knowledge by good sadhana, and if we're more advanced, by Raghunuga Bhakti, everything. And then when Krishna sends those people, you know, then we'll be competent to be good tools and to be able to communicate to them as much as possible. You know? But on the other hand, all the acharyas are so much bhakti, even though everybody's feeling the same thing. That personally, I messed my life up. And he said, you know, his songs, he's lamenting like that. You know? On the other hand, in terms of, I wish I could communicate this more. So we shouldn't become frustrated and give up, but we should also be thinking, well, we did do something. Just the fact that you walk around as a devotee, you know. If you walk around, all the old people around you are all miserable. It's just going to influence your consciousness. You know? Life is miserable, so let me just, you know, enjoy myself now, get a beer. You know? But if you just walk around it at 65 years old with gray hair and you're kind of smiling and you're chanting, whatever, then people look and they think, well, maybe there is something higher in life. So that's what I would say. Just, you know, go on with our process, our sadhana, and then, you know, be conscious that Krishna is sending people and that don't become frustrated that we can't, you know, convert them 100% like this and that, you know, but then do the best we can. And know that from his side, that Krishna is also doing a lot too. That's all I could say.
Another point is that it's the age of Kali, and people who are genuinely have first-class intelligence, and just in brief, Prabhupada described that someone with first-class intelligence, you give him good instruction, he hears and he will follow. Someone with second-class intelligence, you give him good instruction, well, he may not follow it right away, but when he doesn't follow it, he realizes from just saying, oh, okay, now I understood what was meant, and then he learns. Someone with third-class intelligence, you give him instruction, and he doesn't follow that instruction and still never learns, even in spite of the fact he heard good instruction. Now, in reality, most of us only had to be really second-class intelligent, and we probably were at best second-class intelligent. Most of us had, in our youth, experienced the material world and really tried to enjoy it. And we tried to the best of our ability to try to enjoy, but yet we experienced nothing but frustration. Therefore, when we heard good intelligence, we didn't have to be first-class intelligent because we already knew, we already heard, okay, this makes perfect sense. You can't. There's no pleasure to be had out there because we've already tried it. So most of us, second-class intelligent. Someone with first-class intelligence is quite rare. So at least we can give instruction, and they may not follow it in their early youth. But as they go through life, those things that we have said are going to be there in their heart. And then, like us, if they at least have second-class intelligence, it's sometimes later in their life they're going to realize, oh, yes, everything that I've heard, everything Ramananda Prabhu said, now I realize it. This is true. And then we can surrender. So we may not see that instant result, whereas we came kind of quickly because we were already burned out, most of us.
One thing I've been preaching right now, and I'm preaching to somebody, it's an exchange of letters. You know, he's an intellectual, he's an academic fellow, he's a professional, he's very successful, he has a very accommodating, intelligent wife, and John Maheshwari is Shruta Shribir. You know, he actually is intelligent, and he actually thinks that he's enjoying, at least that's his first response, that actually he's enjoying all these things in the material world, you know? And so I think sometimes when Prabhupada would deal with these people, that he actually would take time for him, if they have this John Maheshwari Shruta Shribir, it would take time for him to work with them and finally get them down to the level where they actually could appreciate that they weren't happy. But that's another class of people that as I'm relating to this guy, and I'm wondering, well, maybe this guy was just frustrated, and there are natural people who are happy and stuff like that. But that's what
another point in that regard. I kind of fall into that category. When I met devotees, I really wasn't burned out. I was having pretty good karma, and life seemed pretty good. It's just if things could get better, that I was always open to that. But what really affected me was reading in Bhagavad Gita about karma. And Madan Mohan Prabhu gave me my first Bhagavad Gita. And when I read about karma, it really shocked me to think that, wait a minute, this is all going to, this good streak I'm running on is going to run out. It made perfect sense because I looked around me and I saw so many people that were suffering. And I never understood why, geez, everything's going great for me, but I realized it's temporary. It's going to run out. And I'm going to end up just where they were and perhaps not even in a human form. So that really affected me, knowing that even though it seems good now, it's the party is going to come to an end.
And so even if it's going to get better continuously, it's got to get better on some other platform.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 Wow.
That book, Reservoir of Pleasure, boy, did that ever appeal to me. Just the title. Reservoir of Pleasure, wow.
Yeah, most people would be satisfied with one cup of it.
Yeah. Yeah, an eyedropper full. But a reservoir, wow.
Drop in the desert, yeah. I think it also, too, is just that, again, people, they think they're happy because the modern world, to be happy is actually a real tough situation. That's the advantage of Kali Yuga, you know. And so I think the people that are happy, it's really a real bubble situation. And Prabhupada, I remember he was talking to one young lawyer in Australia and stuff like that. I think he was able to, in his talking, you know, sober fashion about this and that, and was able to bring him to a pretty good perspective pretty quick. You know, that actually, right now I'm kind of thinking I'm happy, but yeah, Swamiji, on a broader sense, yeah, there's a lot of things I need to improve, and what's your message?
It's true, we don't know what happiness until we've heard from the message from the Acharya. We don't even know what happiness is. We were mistaking some, as Dhruva said, kacham bichindam. We were simply searching after broken glass, thinking that's pleasure. But then when we api divyaratnam, when we finally discover what the real gem is, divine love of Krishna, the eternal ecstasy in divine love that never, ever, 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 ever stops increasing, this anandam buddhivardhanam, then we get a whole new perspective of what pleasure is.
Haribol! You know, when Prabhupada was in Berkeley, I had so little, physical association with Prabhupada. All my physical association comes from Jayananda, Hansaduda, who else, and Subdhamadar, you know, what they said. But Prabhupada was in Berkeley, and I was a treasurer. I'd just been an initiated devotee. I hadn't even taken second initiation yet. And so somebody said, oh, you know, you have to come to Prabhupada's room. Yeah, you're the treasurer. Yeah, okay. So I went in there, and I don't think there was any tape recorder going at all, you know. So Prabhupada was sitting there behind his desk, kind of leaned back in a comfortable situation. And there was, I think, Nittai, Brahmananda, and Jayatirtha. And everybody had a big stack of $20 bills in front of them, like that. And so, and they said, okay, you got to count this also, then lock it in the safe, and, you know, so it can be deposited. So I sat there in front of Prabhupada. And for me, it was like, you know, being in front of death personified or something also, that Prabhupada would look at me and know all the stupidity in me and just, you know, fry me to a crisp for all the things I deserved or something, you know. So anyway, but I was also very happy to be there. So later I found out what it was, as far as I understand, is that this Prasadam Distribution International, this business had started thing in Laguna Beach or something. And Jayatirtha actually, he told Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada, as far as the stories are, that these devotees are making money from selling drugs, you know. And so this money is going to be some of their profit, like that, and so on. So do you still want to accept the donation? And Prabhupada said, yes, one time, but not in the future. Tell them we don't need money like this. We don't need money like this. So we'll accept it this time, but never again. And so then apparently Jayatirtha asked Prabhupada, do they get free from the karma in terms of what proportion of the money they gave? So if they profited, like, you know, $100,000 on drug dealing and they gave $10,000, do they get 10% free from the karma? And apparently Prabhupada said, no, this time 100%. Very interesting thing. But while Prabhupada was talking, and
I'm sorry, I'm confused. 100% what? 100% no karma or 100% karma?
100% free from the karma.
Okay. One-time special. I got it. Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah. And, of course, you know, $10,000 in 1975, what would that be now? Maybe it would be $50,000? So someone came and gave Prabhupada a $50,000 donation or something. So it was considerable money, you know. So we were all counting, and Prabhupada was surrounded by all this money, you know, $50,000 in cash. And he was just sitting there, you know, kind of relaxed and preaching, you know. And so he told a story, which I don't think maybe was ever recorded. So he said, there's one man, and he works in the mines, you know, someplace. And every afternoon after his shift in the mine, he goes there in his hellish condition. You know, he sits in the country tavern and drinks a little bit of country beer and, you know, reads the paper. So he's doing this one day, and one like priest goes by, you know. And the priest looked at him and says, you're drinking alcohol. You're going to go to hell. the guy's a little shocked, and he says, well, but you know, I work in the mines all day, and it's miserable, it's cold, it's dark, it's damp, people die regularly. And the guy says, still you're going to hell. And then the he says, but my, you know, my uncle, my father, he also drinks like this, you know. He says, my brothers, we all take a little alcohol like this after work, you know. And the priest just makes a harsh gesture and walks away and says, your whole family is going to hell, you know. So Prabhupada said, then the man is thinking about it, and he thinks, well, you know, if all my family is going to be there, maybe it won't be so bad. So Prabhupada said, this is the, like you're saying, exactly, this is the material world, you know. We're looking around at us, and he's satisfied with this inferior pleasure, he's satisfied with this inferior pleasure, he's tolerating this suffering, you know. And he said, well, I guess that's all there is, you know. So a very nice story, like illustrating this point that, yeah, until we hear the Bhagavatam, it's a fact too. That to me, the first book I got was the Krishna book, and everything, I very much satisfied, like you were saying, that the whole explanation was there, of karma, different religions. That was one of the two things that really impressed me, that all the different philosophies I encountered, probably explain them and put this, you know, devotional philosophy right in the foremost. And the second thing I remember was I was reading the book, and you know, I was a vegetarian, trying this and that, trying to concentrate, you know, and it said, like, you know, Krishna chopped all these people in thousands of pieces, and all this blood was flowing, and Balaram came out and smashed them, more and more blood was flowing, and anybody who reads this story will never have any fear of this and that, you know, and so on, you know. So I read a lot of science fiction, you know, but this was, you know, just in terms of the story and everything else, the intensity was like unbelievable, you know. And then beyond that, the author was obviously a very intelligent, you know, sober person, you know, but he was presenting it all like it was fact, you know. So at some point, I remember I was reading this, and my intelligence, my mind said, this is either the biggest lie I've ever read, or it's the absolute truth. So my intelligence said to my mind, it said, hey buddy, if it's either the absolute truth or an absolute lie, in either case, it's absolute. And so I was just shocked at realizing, yeah, nobody even lied like this, you know. So at that point, I really got this kind of like, you know, brute experience that the book itself was absolute, you know, so on. So I guess it's kind of like a good answer to my question there, that these people, yeah, that they think they're enjoying, but as we give them a perspective in a way that doesn't freak them out, you know, then they can appreciate that, yeah, this, all my enjoyment is just really inferior. You know?
Why don't you finish this story and say, how did he tell them why was hell bad? Because, I mean, he did tell them it's hot there, and so the mines are hot. You remember what he actually convinced them that was what they didn't have in hell?
No, that was the end of the story. Prabhupada stopped the story there, that just, that everybody, that's the material life, that everybody looks at everybody else, and there's no higher perspective like that, so everybody just tolerates the material world because they haven't got a higher taste.
Oh, well, then he told the story another time in a different way, and then at the end, the miners, they weren't convinced yet. Well, what's wrong with that?
There's a newspaper, right?
That's it. Yeah, there's no newspaper. Oh.
Oh, God. It's a fact, isn't it? I mean, Madonna, are you still attracted to reading newspapers? You find them lying around every now and again. I can't look at them. Well, maybe.
Well, I think the Internet's been replaced, yeah. Newspapers. They hardly have them anymore, newspapers. At least a couple of towns I lived in, they just stopped making them, or they made them smaller, and practically everybody does everything online now.
Wow. In the airports, they still got a pretty robust business, you know? Yeah.
No Internet there.
Yeah.
Dandavat Maharaj.
Hare Krishna. So my basis is, sir.
Okay, I heard, you know, Rishabh Dev and some of the other devotees in Laguna Beach, when they gave this donation, and Prabhupada understood the circumstances of that donation, what I heard, one devotee told me was, that Prabhupada said, because you have given this to Krishna, there's no reaction for this money that you've gotten illegally. But because you've gotten the money like this, there's no benefit. And I thought of that for years. I thought about that quote, and I thought, because you didn't do a proper sacrifice, you didn't earn it honestly, you know, and, you know, we know Jayananda gave his life savings to Prabhupada as a donation to get Krishna book published. Wow, what a donation that was. So, you know, so there's tremendous benefit if you earn it honestly, the you know, what you're giving. But if you do it illegally, you're cheating in some way, then that affects the benefit. But there's no reaction.
There's something like the, how's it go? That, well, you know, if money earned illegally, then the benefits you get disappear within 3 years, and the benefits that have been purchased by the benefits disappear within 5 or something. And I've seen that, I think myself too, I've seen that even in devotional service, like you're saying. That's
so
a lot of the income in the Berkeley. Yeah.
Huh? Where did you hear that?
I can't remember where it was, but somebody was quoting it from Akhetopadesh or Chandika Pandit, like that, you know? Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
Because I remember the
Easy come, Berkeley, easy go, right? Easy come.
Yeah,
easy
the Berkeley Temple, a lot of the income came from, you know, the mothers' parties, which were engaged in all these like mixed activities. And because of that, they bought all these houses. But then one by one, they lost them after some time, like that, the same way, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah. But I guess we should go to 12 o'clock, and we're working on a. Actually, what I have to do is I have to write a test for Bhakti Bhai Bhava now. And it's, God, if anybody's done this, you know it's 3 times harder to write a good test than it is to take one. You've got to make the questions unambiguous and everything else, so I've got to work on that. But it's fun, too. You know, it makes you think about the content. It's for the, in Houston, they're finishing off the first year of Bhakti Bhai Bhava. Two doctors, one lawyer, several devotees, all engineers, and it's really nice, you know. And they're very enthused now to start the third canto. So we're gonna work on that this afternoon.
I read an interesting quote about knowledge is qualities. Qualities is knowledge. So it's not if you remember something, it's if the quality comes out in your character, that means you have the knowledge.
Ah.
And then when I started thinking about it, the Bhagavad Gita 13:8-12, the process of knowledge, they're all qualities. Humility, prideness, nonviolence. And then you start, and the qualities that one gets by the knowledge is Krishna's, those 50 qualities that the jiva can get to some degree. In the pure devotional stage, they manifest Krishna's qualities to some degree. Saksat, Hari, Twaina. The qualities are manifesting. So, and then of course even Chanaka Pandit, he mentions that a learned person is known, and he mentions what he sees other all women as his mother, which is a quality. He sees other people's properties as untouchable, and he treats others as he would like to be treated. So I just thought it was interesting to note the difference in how the chit potency, sat chit ananda, is manifested in Krishna consciousness as being free from the influence of the mundane or the academic usage of the words. They've captured so many words, and they define them according to their context, and we have to redefine them again now under the proper context, just since you're writing a test.
actually, Prabhupada says that what you're saying, it knowledge means wisdom, you know? But he said, maybe you know, he says that what the university is teaching is not knowledge, it's shilpa. He said, livelihood. He said that kind of knowledge, so-called knowledge, is not actually knowledge. It's actually called shilpa. How to build things, how to do this, how to do that.
Technician. And then, of course, when you think about that, it turns an engagement is an occupation. How you occupy your time, and then course, Krishna says, give up all occupations. Give up all your, how you occupy all your time, and just surrender. Use your time to surrender instead of use your time to do a mundane occupation, which is dharma, artha, kama, basically. So I was thinking that basically we have to redefine all the words. They've stolen the words, and they've redefined all the words. We need a glossary of putting the words back in the proper perspective. Like Bhakti Siddhanta, they said he practically revamped dictionaries. He used his language in such a way that the dictionaries had to catch up with him.
The, for example, the word chastity, how many Americans do you think know that word?
In reality or in academic?
I mean, even know what the word means. I mean, it used to be a girl's name in America. Girls were named chastity. But now I have a suspicion that it's not interesting that they don't know what the word means.
Well, it's a word from the mode of goodness, which was duty to a principle. And in the mode of passion, there's no duty to principles. It's sensual whimsicalness, which is the superlative condition. Yeah. So when goodness goes away and duty goes away, all the principles that were related to duty and religion, a mode of goodness, they're all gone.
Another word I didn't know until I became a devotee was auspicious. I didn't.
Oh my God.
I was a college graduate because nothing's auspicious in this world. In fact, one of the qualities of pure devotional service is the beginning of all auspiciousness.
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
nothing auspicious in this world. So why would you even know the term? I didn't know that term until I was reading Prabhupada's books.
One of the people we dealt with was the director of Rhys Jones. He was one of the three people in charge of drug abatement for the University of California Medical Center, you know, working in that whole area. He was talking to Swoop Damodar Mars and myself. Mars was in devotional clothes. He's a very nice person, but the same thing, he said there was just no contact. So he said, all this drug addiction is really a social and spiritual problem. So I noticed when he said the word spiritual, he had to like consciously form it in his mouth. It was like he just never used the word. You know, like that stuff. Spiritual.
Maharaj, I had a question. Is knowledge considered a noun or a verb?
To know, the verb would be to know, it would be the noun like that. But knowledge would, of course, be, you know, I guess, you know, would be like, you know, the a noun, yeah.
So it's always a noun, all right.
Yeah. Because it's interesting, in the Bhagavad Gita, you're quoting all those qualities are the qualities. It says, I count all of this to be knowledge and the contrary to be ignorance. But what the context and everything else is, those are the qualities you need, or the method, and Prabhupada says in the purport, the method to acquire knowledge. You know, so I don't know knowing. That's the thing about Sanskrit, the knowers, the knowingers. All these are the knowingers, and without these knowingers, everything else is an unknowinger.
And then, of course, it mentions when you acquire that knowledge, that comes out as qualities. Just like the Brahmin, he's known by these qualities. He has knowledge. He's a Brahmin.
Yeah.
But what is knowledge? He has these qualities, and his qualities, that's how he occupies his time. He talks about, he studies, he talks to other people about what he studies from the Vedas, by all the Vedas, Krishna's to be known. So he occupies his time in these qualities, which are
manifest. The lawyers, to some degree, when they in their profession, they talk about this. Maybe you know this. They'll talk about somebody being a scholar and being a good this and that and stuff. But it's interesting, along with that, that within that law profession, there is some appreciation for personal qualities. Radhika was pointing out that the University of Florida, when they had their big promotional thing for they're in Gainesville, for the campus there, they had a big thing they were sending to all their alumni to show how good they were. He said it was all technical stuff. They didn't even glorify their liberal arts program, literature, languages, history, those kind of things. And specifically among all their political accomplishments, their technical accomplishments, what they were so proud of was they were the first hospital to do a face transplant. Okay, on that note, I think we're going to depart now, and I hope nobody has to have another face transplant, that this is your last face. So Prabhupada can die.
Jai, thank you, Maharaj.
We keep changing faces through our whole life. Every time I look in the mirror, I notice they're transplanting an older face on me.
One last thing. It says that if you're not a devotee, you have no good qualities. So I was thinking maybe those two are related, because the good qualities, those are actually Krishna's quality, because when you're a devotee, then you're not on the mental platform. So how it is that they have no good qualities because they're on the mental platform? What's the opposite of the mental platform that gives you the good qualities? Is that all right or too late?
No, we have to Prabhu.
It's too late. Okay, next time.
Jai, well, thank you, Maharaj. Thank you, everyone. And I look forward to seeing everybody back here tomorrow.
Jai.
Hare Krishna.
Jai. Hare Krishna, everyone.
Hare Krishna.